So, was U.S. government domestic propaganda ever really that much of a threat? Absolutely, says historian Thomas Fleming, author of The Illusion of Victory, America in World War I. The First World War was the occasion for the government's most ruthless battle for American hearts and minds.
World War I is the war in which we can see where the federal government decided they had to control as much as possible of all the information that was going out to the public. And so in concert with an ex-newspaper man named George Creel, C-R-E-E-L, a very fascinating volcanic-type character, President Wilson created the Committee on Public Information, which soon became a gigantic federal monster. They had 150,000 people working for them by the time the war ended, which didn't last that long. You know, it was only a year and a half. And yet it became a huge operation.
It was very much the Ministry of Propaganda.
There's no doubt about it. These people were into everything. They actually published an official federal newspaper, 32 pages, tabloid size, every day. It was a daily paper that went out to every newspaper in America.
Brooke, in her book, The Influencing Machine, talks about the Committee for Public Information and said that its role was to spread war fever by suppressing bad news and equating dissent with disloyalty.
Everybody who wasn't enthusiastic about the war was liable to get in a lot of trouble. Under something called the Espionage Act, which Wilson had put through Congress, anybody who said anything against the government or against Wilson in particular could be sentenced to jail. One farmer in the Dakotas, I'm not sure north or south, told a young man, don't join the army. This war is a lot of foolishness. He got 5 years in jail. If you were riding on a streetcar and you happened to say to the man next to you, I think President Wilson is an idiot, if he reported you to the Committee on Public Information or to the American Protective League, which was their enforcement arm, you could do a lot of time in jail.
And how did the government egg people on to denounce their neighbors and family members and friends? What did the propaganda look like?
They had a huge team of people who traveled around the country. They were called the Four-Minute Men. And very often you'd go to a movie and the screen would go dark and one of the Four-Minute Men would walk out and he'd give this rousing speech how we have to fight, we have to believe in America, we have to make the world safer, democracy, all the cliches that Wilson had put into his speech declaring war. This was all drummed into the minds of people at every level, all the way across the nation.
During World War I, the propaganda machine was a vast juggernaut. What happened in World War II? How did Roosevelt try to influence public opinion?
World War II, we had a president who had been in Washington during World War I. Franklin D. Roosevelt had been assistant secretary of the Navy, and he really saw how the Wilson administration operated, and he realized it was a mistake, this whole thing. And he also felt that keeping the American public involved in the war and loyal to it was a matter of some fragility. So many people had emerged from World War I totally disillusioned. And so Roosevelt relied on voluntary participation by the media in promoting the war in various ways. One example that struck me as unusual, and I only discovered it after quite a lot of research, was that he persuaded them for the first 18 months of the war never to show a picture of a dead American soldier or sailor. And not until Life magazine had a cover with some dead American soldiers on an island that they had attacked in the South Pacific. By this time, thousands of Americans had been killed. But that was the first time that they allowed the public to see the reality of death in the war. But this was the general pattern. He did not use the kind of force and intimidation that Wilson relied on.
Now, after World War II, Congress, perhaps understanding the dangers of propaganda, passed the Smith-Mundt Act. As of this month, there has been a revision to the Smith-Mundt Act, which does permit, under certain circumstances, some foreign propaganda, that's to say Voice of America broadcast and so forth, to be rebroadcast in the United States. Do you see this as an ominous development?
No, I really don't. I think that as long as our own media is full-fledged and operating, they can correct any of the extremes to which a government organization might go. I can see why this new regulation has been put in. There are many immigrant groups in the United States from countries like Somalia who need to hear some of the propaganda that we are sending to Somalia. They're now trying to become Somalian Americans, but they don't have access to a great deal of reporting on their individual country. But this would be corrected by the Voice of America being able to reach their radios and television.
Tom, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Tom Fleming is author of The Illusion of Victory, America in World War I.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.